Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about what they do in their civilian career and how they got there. Today is episode number 168 with Ryan Witt.
Well, you know, kind of interesting, on my second tour of duty in Iraq, I started reading an investing book in stocks, in the stock market. I didn't know anything about it. I needed something to basically kill time when I was, you know, bored hanging out. I don't even remember the name of the book, honestly. It was some simple book on investing, but it was very compelling to me because it was a way that you could essentially make money by not actually owning anything. And so it just seemed really interesting that that was even feasible.
Well, if this is your first time listening to Beyond the Uniform, welcome. I hope you enjoy the show. My intention is to provide those on active duty and military veterans with insights into all of the incredible job offers that they are extremely well qualified for and some tips and advice on how to get there if it's a career that sounds interesting to them. My guest today is going to be talking about a field that I actually knew very little about before this interview. He is a quantitative analyst. He is also a data scientist. I wanted to reference three episodes that if you like this interview that you should definitely check out. The first is my interview with Amanda Kasari, episode number 162. She is a data scientist. She's worked at a lot of very prominent companies and has an incredible story. Episode number 99 with Jacob Martinez. He just kind of struck me as someone just like Ryan, as you'll learn, is a lifelong learner. Jacob really inspired me with his commitment to constantly learning and growing in his chosen career path, which is running one of America's fastest growing companies. And then episode number 86 with Cal Newport, where we talk about his book, So Good They Can't Ignore You, in this thought of career capital, of constantly investing in your own skills and learning to provide more autonomy in your career path. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, I've got links to all of these. So if you're driving, you don't have to remember any of this. There is links to each of those episodes, as well as about eight other resources that Ryan recommends to listeners who are interested in learning more about data science. You'll also find a text transcript that will take you through everything you need to know from this if you want to go back and skim through on the interview. And special thanks to Kathleen Dillon for doing those text transcripts for us. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Ryan Witt. Well, joining me today in Boulder, Colorado is Ryan Witt. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, thanks. How you doing, Justin?
Good, good. I wanted to give an abbreviated background for listeners because Ryan has a very interesting career path. He is a quantitative analyst at Arches Asset Management. He started out as a sergeant in the Army, where he served for over 8 years, and he's worked as a futures and options analyst at British Petroleum, a middle office trading analyst at XR Trading, and a data scientist at DHF Team, amongst other things. He also holds a master's in applied statistics from the University of Colorado Boulder, as well as a bachelor's in economics from Indiana University, Bloomington. So Ryan, maybe to start things off, for someone who's on active duty, how would you explain the company that you work at, Arches Asset Management? How would you explain what that is?
Well, I guess before I can explain what Arches Asset Management does, I'd have to explain what futures markets are in general. And so futures markets they're very similar to the stock market in that there's an exchange and you can buy and sell contracts. The difference is when you're buying a stock, you're buying a share in a company. And when you're buying a futures contract, you're actually buying some underlying commodity. It's a contract that's worth that. And so, for instance, if I'm buying a corn future, I'm buying a contract that's worth 5,000 bushels of corn, and there's an expiration date on that. And so if I purchase that contract and then I hold that contract all the way to the expiration date, I actually have to take delivery of 5,000 bushels of corn at whatever price I paid for that futures contract. Most people, though, they don't actually ever hold these contracts into delivery. They don't necessarily want that underlying commodity. So what they want to do is they want to buy those corn contracts when the price is low in the hopes that the price increases before that expiration date, and then they just sell the contract back and they make the profit. And so that works conversely for selling. You can sell it high in the hopes that the price goes down, and then you end up buying that contract back at a lower price, and you profit on the difference. And so what Arches Asset Management does is we buy and sell those contracts, but we do it basically on behalf of very large pension funds, different types of institutional investors who will invest in us because they want exposure to those futures markets. They want to be able to profit from them, but they don't necessarily have the expertise to go in and buy and sell those contracts themselves. So they invest in our company, we trade those on their behalf, and then we keep a percentage of the profits that we make for them. Mm.
And I think that's a great explanation of it. I think you break it down in a way that's really easy to understand. So the next question I have then is what is it that you do? If you were talking to someone on active duty, how would you explain your role as a quantitative analyst?
So as a quantitative analyst specifically, what I do is I write computer programs that analyze market data and try to find patterns in that market data that we can then convert into trades. So I'll see if, there's some time of year where maybe the price of soybeans is increasing or decreasing at a consistent rate, and then we'll make bets based on that analysis. Mm. We'll either buy or sell those contracts. And that's kind of, as a purely quantitative analyst, that's a lot of what you do. I work for a small fund, and we had an individual leave recently who did a lot of kind of risk management administrative duties. And so I've had to take on those as well. And I think that's something that, anybody who's going to work in this industry kind of at a smaller firm has to understand that, your jobs are not limited to just kind of what you're hired for. Typically, you have to, especially if you've got some technical background, you write a lot of code that's going to end up maybe taking care of some administrative function at the firm. Mm. So I do a fair amount of that as well.
And I mean, it sounds like there's, a lot going on, but if you were to break down just kind of like a typical day, could you walk us through? I know a lot of listeners have talked about, they like hearing about what time people get into the office and leave the office and what they're doing and what weekends look like. And so could you kind of paint that picture of what your life looks like?
Sure. So I get in around 6 a.m. Mountain Time, and that basically just corresponds with when the markets open on the East Coast. Most of these futures markets are kind of based around Chicago or New York time, and so it's fairly early, I'd say, by Colorado standards, but it's not that bad. And then the first thing I do is I kind of check on all of the automation that I have running overnight. So there's a lot of automation that's pulling in data from various different places. It's running different types of calculations. It's updating servers. And then we're checking to make sure that we agree with the profit and loss that we made the day prior against the exchange. We agree with everything that we bought and sold, just some of these administrative functions that I'd say at a larger firm, they might have a dedicated team. A lot of times what the smaller funds are going to do is they're going to hire people that have coding backgrounds to just automate a lot of that work. And that's a lot of what I do is it's checking that, making sure the automation works. And then if something didn't work, you got to dig into the code, kind of debug it, figure out what went wrong. And that type of thing. 90% of the time, everything's fine. But once in a while, like today, I had a day where there was a Windows update, and that screwed up a bunch of stuff. And so I spent most of my day just trying to figure out how to fix everything that had been screwed up. So it's not always glamorous, but that's a lot of the job. And then if everything works the way it's supposed to, it's project work. And a lot of it's very self-directed, which I think is awesome. So kind of varies from, you might get a market analysis request from the hedge fund manager. You might get a request to improve one of your trading algorithms or write a new one. Or it might just be kind of there's some process somebody wants to automate, and they'll say, hey, can you automate this? 90% of the time you can. And so then you'll write some code to automate something somebody needs to not have to do every day.
I'd love to dig into those. When you said the market analysis, what does that mean? So like if the manager said like, hey, I'd like this market analysis, what does that look like for you?
So a lot of times it's going to be, he's going to specify some specific contract that he wants to analyze. So I'll say, hey, I want to look at soybeans that expire in July. So if I bought the soybeans today, they expired in July. Tell me historically what the prices tend to do. Tell me how much volatility is in that market. How much risk will I take on if I, say, purchase that today? Mm. And there's various different ways you can kind of quantify that risk. A lot of that is it's a simple kind of statistical analysis, and it's one of those, you'll learn just how to kind of produce summary statistics in grad school or really any sort of stats program you want to take, and it's as simple as that.
And then you had said another one you had said is writing a new algorithm. What are you writing this in? Is this what like language do you use? And where did you even learn how to write these algorithms?
So I personally spend most of my time in R, which is kind of a statistical programming language. A lot of people use Python. I'd say Python and R are the two most common languages for this type of work, at least at a high level. And I learned it on my own. It was self-study. So in graduate school, you don't necessarily learn all the tools that you need, but you kind of learn what you need to know. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of it's going to be self-learning. And so for R, I took a Coursera data science course, learned a lot of R programming there. And then I just saw some opportunities just in my daily work to use R and try to automate some things. And in doing that, I just kind of got good at it over time. Mm.
And okay, so I threw you off your day, though. I know you got in at 6 a.m. You're doing all sorts of different things with market analysis and writing new algorithms and automating something, automating different things. Where does the day go from there?
So from there, there's some end of day, some more administrative stuff where we kind of tabulate all of the trading that we did, tabulate all of our positions. I calculate an end of day P&L. I'd say not every firm does this. A lot of times firms wait until the next day, but just we're kind of small enough and nimble enough that I'm able to figure out what our P&L is that day. So our profit and loss, we send out those reports to investors. Just that general kind of administrative stuff that needs to get done. And then, I mean, honestly, if it's an easy day, if it's a good day, I can usually get out of there by 2:00, 2:30. Hmm. If there's, a lot going on, I had to debug some code or, something crazy happened in the market, it's a later day, but that's not super common. Mm.
That does seem, and I'm assuming weekends are generally not having to work, not having to go into the office?
Right, yeah. Weekends, rarely have to work. Once in a while, I'll go in and do a little bit on it. Usually, that's just of my own accord. It's not something I have to do, but, there's some interesting things you'll work on from time to time that you genuinely, I think, want to do a little bit more work on.
Yep.
In general, I mean, in terms of hours worked, it's a really great, I think, lifestyle. You don't have to work as much as working at, say, an investment bank or one of those types of more traditional financial firms.
Yep. I mean, two things that stand out to me, and definitely correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like one really nice thing about your job, and this probably applies to countless other jobs that work those market hours, is you're early mornings, but I remember friends on the in on the West Coast, Pacific time, it was like, five, your 6 a.m. is their 5 a.m. And so they're in the office really early to get things going. Mm-hmm. But then, generally it's pretty predictable hours, like a 6 to 2 seems about right from what I've heard from other people who work those sort of market hours where, there's the market is not active on the weekend. So you're not in on the weekend and you're not there super late. And I think that seems really appealing. But I also love that you are literally everyone on your team is getting a daily report card. It's not like you're putting your heads down, working for a year and hoping it works. Every single day, it sounds like you're getting that profit and loss look and saying, you know, how did we do today? Did we perform well? Right. Did we make money or did we not? And I think there's an appeal there of there's so many jobs where you don't get that tight of a feedback loop. You don't really learn if what you're doing is working or failing. And you get very immediate and very objective feedback from the market on how you're doing.
That is true. Yeah. And I will say, you know, you've got various types of trading firms. A lot of firms these days, they're day trading firms. And so they're actually only trading during market hours. They close out their positions at night, which means that they aren't exposed to any sort of market movements that happen overnight. Hmm. And then the next day they restart the system and they do that over and over. For us, we're a little more long-term. So we take longer-term approaches where, you know, we'll put on a trade and then we'll hold it for 3-4 weeks, a couple months maybe. And so you're right in that you're getting that daily immediate feedback. There are times where I will say it's painful feedback and you have to have a lot of faith that you're right, because there's, you know, there's noise in the markets. Things are gonna be choppy and you'll end up losing a lot of money in a day when, even though you were right long term, you took a big one day loss. So that's part of it, I would say. If you want to work somewhere where you're going to be holding positions longer term, you have to have a stomach for that. It's not always easy.
Man, what about, how did you get into this? Like, was this something that you knew that you wanted to do, or how did you find your way from the Army into this line of work?
Well, you know, kind of interesting, on my second tour of duty in Iraq, I started reading an investing book in stocks, in the stock market. I didn't know anything about it. I needed something to basically kill time when I was, you know, bored hanging out. And so started reading I don't even remember the name of the book, honestly. It was some simple book on investing, but it was very compelling to me because it was a way that you could essentially make money by not actually owning anything. And so it just seemed really interesting that was even feasible. And, you know, I ended up studying economics in college, and I didn't know anything about the futures markets, and I kind of randomly got hired into British Petroleum because I know I wanted to do something in the investment world. I didn't know exactly what, and just kind of randomly got put into this job as a futures and options analyst, which at the time was just looking at all the trades that the company executed in the morning and then reconciling them against the exchange, making sure that we agreed. I actually really didn't like that job very much, but that's why I learned how to code, was so I could learn how to actually automate that stuff that I didn't like doing. And so it's kind of one thing led to another. I ended up really enjoying coding and then learning more about how, you know, futures markets work and about statistics and about how, you know, seeing if we could actually find patterns in these markets. It's kind of what's in there.
And you know, for people listening, if they want to go into this sort of career, how important, because I know you went to University of Colorado Boulder, you studied business, you also studied applied statistics. How important is an advanced degree to this career path?
So I'm going to say that depends, which I know is not a great answer, but there's kind of, I think, two approaches you can take. One of them is the approach of self-study, because, as I mentioned earlier, most of the skills I use on a daily basis I did not learn in graduate school. Mm-hmm. Most of the skills are, you know, it's very kind of heavy coding. The statistics component doesn't necessarily mirror the type of statistics you're going to learn in graduate school. It's definitely useful, but it's not going to be a one-for-one kind of transition. And a lot of that stuff, you know, these days we just live in a world where you've got all these kind of massive open online courses. You've got Coursera Data Science and things like that. you can learn so many useful skills doing that, that the advanced degree is less necessary, but it involves A, a lot of self-study, and B, what you'd have to go do then is start analyzing market data yourself and see if you can come up with a trade and get that in front of somebody. If you can do that, I don't think the advanced degree is really going to matter that much. If your preference, though, is to learn at a firm or a fund how to do these things, then it's going to be hard to get looked at without the advanced degree. It's just the nature of the market now. You have a lot of people with bachelor's degrees, kind of a finite number of jobs, and so any recruiter, if they're looking for a weed out component, that more than likely is going to be one of them.
That's I think that's such a great description in general, not just for data science or quantitative analysis, but just, I mean, that matches my experience in that, most of what you learn in graduate school, at least in my case, it sounds like in yours, is not necessarily heavily practical or heavily skill-based. It's not like directly applicable in your job in terms of what tools you're using. And I like the way that you put that, where a bigger company, and I think this applies to a lot of different industries, but a bigger company will look more for pedigree and degrees, and you're competing in such against a wide array of people that those things can have you stand out or be necessary. Whereas if you join a smaller company, they might not be as necessary, and it might be more necessary that the person is able to just execute and get stuff done and be able to learn the tools that they need. So I really like the way that you explain that. I think that's broadly applicable.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's very true. And another cool thing about this industry is as you mentioned earlier, it's very results driven. And so, if you can go out, create some sort of an algorithm or a trade that works or that you have faith in, you can generally sell that in lieu of, I'd say, an advanced degree. If you can tell a hedge fund manager, like, hey, I can make you money, most of them are going to say, all right, let's do this.
Another thing, and you've kind of partially spoken to this already, but I wanted to ask you about other resources, especially if someone's listening and they want to learn more about this as a career path. You've mentioned Coursera so far, and I'm curious, if there's anything in particular on Coursera, as well as like any other books or, I don't know, conferences, publications, websites, anything else that's kind of helped you in this career path that you would recommend to listeners?
There's a few different things. I mean, first off is just Google. Like, anything that you want to know, you can Google how do I do X or how can I learn about X, and you'll find a huge array of just useful information. I took the Coursera, it's a Johns Hopkins data science certification course they have. I know there's a lot of other ones. That's my only experience was that one, but that was a really good, I think, course just to get my feet wet when it comes to coding R. There's some, some practical exercises you have to do, and it is graded, which I think helps just because, you want feedback, you want to see how you're doing. There's a couple of good R programming books. One of them is Introduction to Statistical Learning. There's a website called Kaggle, and what that is various different data science competitions, and it's really cool because you're not necessarily going to be working on any specific type of data science project, but it's a website that lets you engage in these competitions where you're usually trying to predict something. And so you'll write some R code or some Python code that does some sort of predictive analysis. You upload it to the website, and then you'll get scored and you'll get ranked versus other people. And it's fun. It's a great way, I think, to get your feet wet in data science and, learn how to code and do those things in an applied fashion. There's DataCamp and CodeAcademy.com. They both have R, Python kind of, programming language, interactive tutorials. Those are pretty helpful. If you're actually interested in trading specifically, then there's a really good book called Market Wizards by Jack Swagger. It's really good. There's a book called Flash Boys and that is Michael Lewis. And I'd say not necessarily what every trading firm does, but it's a really interesting read. It's an easy, fun read, and it'll kind of give you an idea of a lot of the challenges that you face in this industry. And then there's a good book by Robert Carver just called Systemic Trading. And then there's a fellow by the name of Ernest Chan who writes a book called Algorithmic Trading. And I think he does a few podcasts as well. And so those have all been very useful to me.
I had myself on mute to be able to type all these down. But for listeners at Storybox. Not Storybox. My head is in my other part of my day. At beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find in the show notes a list of all of these. And Ryan, I really appreciate the detail there. Usually I get kind of like a book or a podcast, but the level of explanation you gave for each of those resources, as well as I love that, you know, for people listening, there's online courses, there's books, there's, you know, all sorts of things. So depending on your learning style, there's a lot there to check out. And the other aspect that I really appreciate about that, Ryan, is it's just kind of inspiring to see the way that you're really trying a lot of different things to learn and to grow. And I love the thought of the Kaggle website you were talking about, where they have the competitions. And I love that thought of trying things and seeing how you do and getting that competitive spirit going as a teaching instrument to learn and to improve your skills. I think that's really cool.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely think that, you know, any sort of applied project is going to teach you so much more than, you know, a class or a book or anything like that. You want to read, you know, to understand the basics, but beyond that, it's doing that at least helps me learn. Mm.
Is there, I'm just kind of thinking of a random question here, but I'm wondering if you can think of, if someone's on active duty right now and they're listening to this, any sort of indications of like, these are signs that you may love this career path and these are signs that you would hate them. And I'm just guessing that one of them is going to be centered around math and like very structured thinking. And it seems like what you're doing, and you know, it's in your title, it's very quantitative. So it's very numbers driven, but I'm just kind of curious, any thoughts on signs that someone may love or hate this?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you analytical? Do you enjoy kind of breaking apart a complex problem into smaller components? And, you know, can you organize that? And I think it actually would work well for a lot of people in military leadership positions, where that's an important component of what you do. There is a comfort with numbers. I think comfort with coding is more important, and because you know, a lot of the math you're going to do with computers, so it's important to understand the fundamental math. But with the actual calculation, 90% of the time you're going to write some sort of code to do. So I would say, if you're drawn to that at all, it's great. It's very logical. It's a linear, structured thinking. You know, maybe people that don't think like that could do very well in it. Also, I can only speak for myself, but yeah, I think, you know, the coding component intimidates a lot of people, and I don't think it needs to, because it's actually, once you just have to get through that initial pain of learning something new, and once you do, it starts to become very fun, I think. And it builds a lot of confidence in terms of solving tough problems.
That's great. That's great. Well, I always like to leave the last question a little bit more open-ended, which is, you know, you've answered all my questions about this, but I'm sure there's things I didn't ask about. And so I'm just kind of curious if there's anything else that you'd want to share with listeners about either your career path or just in general, that transition to a civilian career.
Well, I will say, for me, one of the most valuable things I did was, like, really as soon as I got off active duty, I went straight to school, and that enabled me to kind of maintain at least some structure, some level of, you know, having something I had to do on a regular basis. If I hadn't done that, I don't know that I would have done it in the long run. And I can't say that's going to work for everybody, but I think that was, something that worked out very well for me. And especially in college is a lot of fun. And I talk to a lot of kind of active duty vets who get off active duty and they don't really want to go to college. And I would say that, you're not going to have any more fun. You're getting paid by the military to go to class 3 or 4 days a week and learn stuff and hang out with girls. It's really not bad at all.
not too much of a downside there. Yep.
Yeah. Not too much of a downside. So I'd say, if you don't know what you want to do, I think it's a great way to kind of figure that out. And if you do, and college isn't it, I totally, I don't think that everybody needs it. I think that there's so much self-learning and other types of things you can do. But definitely if you're kind of questioning what you want to do, it's a great way to figure that out. And then, the other thing is just, I think having a learning mentality is very important throughout your life, because especially today, the job market is changing very rapidly. The skills that are relevant are changing very rapidly. You've got, machine learning, and you've got AI that's taking over a lot of jobs that used to be available to people that no longer are. And so, stay learning your whole life, and never just get complacent because you get good at something and fail to look at what the next option or opportunity is.
Mm. That's great. I mean, I love that thought. I do think that education, whether it's undergrad or grad school, is like a great way to get more clarity about what you want to do. But I also like what you'd said. That it provides that structure. And I think that's something that's come up in the last 160 plus of these interviews, is that it can be jarring to leave the structure of the military and go into completely an unstructured environment. And so school is kind of a way to maintain some of that structure while providing a lot of autonomy. And then I also really love that thought of lifelong learning. And I think you're right. I think it's even more important now to just continuously be learning and growing and adding to your skill set. And for listeners, I'll add a couple links in the show notes to, I'm thinking of a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You that I reference frequently on the show, but I did an episode with the author that I think that's very, very related to Ryan's comments. As well as there's an interview I did with Jacob Martinez, who I believe he was an Army sergeant as well. And I'm just blown away by his commitment to lifelong learning, just like Ryan, and where he talks about all the conferences he's going to and books he's reading, how he's just constantly pushing himself to learn and grow. And I appreciate that you point that out, Ryan, because I think that's so critical regardless of the career path one goes down, to just continuously be growing and learning and challenging oneself.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Well, Ryan, I appreciate your connecting with me and the Beyond the Uniform audience, and thank you so much for sharing your story.
All right, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Surface.
All right, well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ryan. I know this was a slightly shorter interview than normal, but it was very efficient in diving in. If you are interested, I hope you check out the resources at beyondtheuniform.io in the show notes. I think that Ryan did a great job of detailing books and all sorts of different things that you can use to not only figure out if this is the career path you want to pursue, but also start learning the skill sets you're going to need in those roles. So I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.